Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Hi, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn. We have a full schedule of guests today. We're going to be talking to a lot of people. I love it when we have a program like that. We have guests from the cast of the opening show of the new season of the Butler Little Theater with us here in the studio first. We're going to be talking later about, this is a pretty neat thing coming up later this week. It's Thursday. Yeah, it's this Thursday down at Riverside Landing in Oakmont. It's a gathering of authors. These are local authors. When I say local, I don't mean Butler or Butler County, but Western Pennsylvania. And some of these people are pretty well known, including C. William Davis, who's been with us. In fact, I think he's going to be with us on the program to talk about what's coming up here. So we'll talk about that, what's going to happen. And also today we continue our series of chats. We're in the process of talking with all of the top administrators in the school districts here in the region. Just an update, see what's going on. And we talked today with Dr. Tracy Vital, who is the superintendent in the Seneca Valley School District. So all of that coming up on the program today. We'll be busy, and we're glad you could be with us here. Another hot day. Temperatures have already pushed up into the mid-80s, and here we are just during the noon hour. Wow. Well, let's meet our guest, first of all, from the Butler Little Theater. The first show of the new season opens this weekend. Producing the show is Marianne Snyder. And disclaimer, we are friends of long standing. All right, Marianne?
I won't even say how long.
Can you, my engineer tells me I need to have you pull your chair in a little bit closer for me there.
So he can do that. How's that?
That's much better. Okay. He'll be happy.
Okay, great. Happy engineer.
You know, other than the fact, obviously, we know each other forever, but I can't remember the first show we ever did again. Well, the first time we met, you would have been working at WISR.
That's right. It was WISR. Absolutely. Yeah. And, oh, my, we go back so far with shows, Dave. I would be hard-pressed to remember, as we were just talking recently.
Marianne is producing the show, and it's another Neil Simon show, which have proven year in and year out to be one of the most popular shows at the Butler Little Theater.
They really have. We're so thrilled to be doing Biloxi Blues, which is a follow-up to Brighton Beach Memoirs we did, I believe, in 2015. Mm-hmm. And we read the play reading, which I'm a part of. We read the show last year, and all of us fell in love with it immediately. And I really, I feel kind of compelled to share the process of what we went through, because we all love the show. We were very excited about casting it and felt that at our first audition, the theater was just going to be filled. And we would have these masses of young men and people wanting to be in our show. Well, that did not happen. And I will tell this story because it has such a wonderful ending. And for any other directors or producers out there, they can feel my pain. We had a difficult time. We didn't get enough young men. Ultimately, of course, we did. Bob still credits my son, actually, with recruiting Grant because he had a show at Cummings West. And I got there early, and I saw Grant as the barista and said, Grant, do you act? Well, yes, actually, I do. I said, be at the Butler Little Theater tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. Well, lo and behold, I mean, I had said this to no less than, excuse the hyperbole, 125 people, and they never came. Well, Grant came, and voila, we have a wonderful Don Carney. We were doing really well until it came up to time for our first reading, and we still did not have a Sergeant Toomey, who was to be a little bit older. Interestingly, and I don't even know if you fellas know this, our director, Craig, forgive me, Bob, wanted to play that part. But the board had asked him to direct, and so he agreed. Well, it came down to the point where I just said, Bob, we're going to co-direct this because you're going to have to play Toomey. We had asked many, many, many men to come and audition, and for a multitude of reasons, whether it was the wrong time of year, I don't know, we were not successful. I called Don Shear mainly to see if he had any suggestions. Well, 5 minutes later, he was at the theater, and he looked at our schedule and he said, well, if I could have this night and this night off for my group, Anger the Ant, I can do this. Well, that was, we were into our first reading. We had gone through Act One. Bob and I did not need to confer. We were well aware of what Don could do. And we gave him a script. He got on stage for Act Two, and truly, the rest is history. I won't belabor. You just have to come and see the show, because we have one of the finest casts I have ever been privileged to work with. You're going to love them. In addition, we talk so much about the men, but we do have two great gals. Allison Torres is Eugene's love interest, and Amy Kennard is a phenomenal lady of the night. And just a little aside, this scene between Eugene and Rowena really happened to Neil Simon. It did not happen in Biloxi. It happened in New York City. But he felt he really wanted to put it into the play because it was just such a significant and meaningful time of his life. And there, the other thing I did want to say, we have been trying to be very proactive about issuing mature audience. But now I'm wondering if we're overdoing it. There is nothing offensive in this show. The show is simply not appropriate for children. It's a show about young men going into the Army. So whatever your mind, wherever your mind goes, yes, it's all there. It's simply not appropriate for children.
Yeah, well, adults, people should understand that. It's not a dirty show. It's just not appropriate for little kids. That's
exactly.
All.
Exactly. So with that, other than throwing a shout out to Bob Craig, who is doing, he had this show in his mind from the time we read it, and to Bob Craig and Art Black, who have both been phenomenal with this show, I would like to turn the rest of this over to the guys.
Well, I'll come back to you a little bit later because I want to talk a little bit about the trilogy. But let's meet three members of the cast. I'm going to go around the table here just like at Thanksgiving so I don't get mixed up. John Carlson is here. John, good to see you again. You were here before, right?
Yeah.
Two or three years ago, maybe?
Yeah, it was about that long ago. Mm-hmm. Fox on the Fairway.
You obviously play one of... The Biloxi Blues is when Neil Simon enlisted in the Army. I guess he enlisted. He wasn't drafted. He enlisted in the Army, and he went to boot camp in Biloxi, Mississippi, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So you are, all of the guys who are here were part of the recruits that were in the boot camp with him.
Yeah, and basically people that he met and probably a couple characters that he came up with. I feel like parts of our characters were probably embellished a little bit, but it made him more entertaining and a lot more fun to play, so I'm not complaining.
He had a habit of doing that, yes. You play Joseph Wykowski, is that how you say the name?
Yeah, that's right, Wykowski.
Also with us is Grant Clark, who plays Don Carney. Grant, nice to have you here.
Hey, thanks for having us, Dave.
I guess that you were all recruits at boot camp, because I notice you all have these U.S. Army boot camp haircuts.
Oh, they're something special, aren't they, Dave?
Was there a little bit of hesitancy about that operation? Did you get a group cut sitting on stage?
We were threatened with it getting on stage. Bob Craig, our director, said that he had a razor, he would just do it himself. And we were all kind of hesitant for that. So what ended up happening is we ended up, I think Don... who plays Toomey in the show, ended up, striking a deal with Double Image Hair Salon up in the Bonaire Plaza, that if we live streamed and gave them a little bit of advertising, that they would give us our recruit haircuts for free.
Idea.
Oh, yeah.
Good idea. Also with us is Josh Donovan. Josh plays Arnold Epstein, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Don't tell me you didn't have any hesitancy about getting all your hair cut off for this thing, huh?
Actually, I love change, so I like little changes, like changing my hair.
Mm-hmm.
I was all for it. Mm-hmm. Not like a mohawk, but
yeah, it's not shaved. It's not Tully Savalas. It's just that's the way they cut the hair of new recruits at any boot camp, whether it's Army, Marines, Navy, whatever.
Yeah.
There are three others of you. I was looking at the cast picture. There appear to be six soldiers, right?
Yes.
Plus your drill instructor.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then, as Marianne mentioned, two women come into the cast occasionally as well. This is reminiscent of a show I did many, 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 many years ago for Musical Theater Guild, 1776, the musical.
Oh, I love that musical.
Which has like 27 men and two women. and that's it. Abigail Adams and Martha Jefferson are the only two women. Mm-hmm. And they both have limited parts. It's all guys. And so that's a little bit different when you're doing a show like that.
When we actually did that for the Butler High School, the theater, we actually did 1776 a few years ago, and I was a part of that. And we obviously could not get enough guys, so we had a lot of the women playing the men. And I don't know, I think it turned out marvelously.
Well, we did have enough guys. Of course, the musical, a lot of guys like to sing. Don't like to dance, but they like to sing. We had a very meticulous director, the late Carl Nade. You knew Carl, didn't you, Marianne? You guys are all too young to have known Carl. He was very meticulous, and he did research and found that in that era of the founding fathers, that none of the men had facial hair. They wore powdered wigs and all kind of other fancy stuff, but no facial hair. Almost all of us had mustaches then, some beards, and they all had to go. And we had a group shave.
So you can relate then.
I can, yeah. That's why I told the story. It's kind of funny. So, and I'll ask Grant, I'll start with you first. Neil Simon, whose alter ego is Eugene, is that right?
Eugene Morris, yes. Yeah.
I know, I saw Brighton Beach Memoirs, and so that's the semi-autobiographical part. He really went to Biloxi, to boot camp?
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, yeah. Mm-hmm. He went to the Biloxi, and I believe a lot of the show is based off of his real experiences, to the extent of which I'm not sure entirely. As John was saying earlier, a lot of it probably, you know, based in hyperbole and
well, he probably put some characters together and an amalgam, you know, of two or three people would turn out to be Joseph Lukowski, yeah, or, you know, something like that. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about Don Carney. How does he fit into this show?
Right. So Don Carney is this, I would call him a very kind man from Montclair, New Jersey. As far as the kind of spectrum of all of the recruits, I would say Don Carney kind of falls in the middle. He gets along with everyone, or at least he tries to. I think he really looks up to Arnold Epstein and Eugene Morris Jerome. They're very intelligent characters, and he, I think, wants to feel like he is as intelligent as them. And he makes a remark to Eugene early on, or not Eugene, Arnold early on, about how, you know, he's a really weird guy, but I like him anyway.
Well, let's talk about Arnold Epstein, played by Josh Donovan. Where does Arnold come from and end up in Biloxi at boot camp?
Arnold is Jewish, and he is a very intelligent, well-read, and sensitive man.
Mm-hmm.
During the play, some things happen to him that really scar him deeply, but he portrays it as kind of crawling out of the hole. He's trying to sound victorious, but he's kind of still stuck in the hole of the army because he does not like the army one bit.
Mm-hmm.
But he's,
well, this is a time, you know, in a back when Neil Simon was going to the army, it was all men. For many of these young men, it was the first time they were away from home on a lengthy basis, and certainly living in a barracks at a boot camp. Now, if you toss in the fact that you're a religious minority, then you've got a whole other set of problems you got to deal with.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I don't think I asked John about Wachowski. What kind of a character is he?
He's the bully. Wachowski, He left Bridgeport, Connecticut. He got on that train, and the second he got on the train, he's just waiting for someone to give him a gun. He just basically wants to go and start shooting people. I'm the source of the problems from Epstein being Jewish. I'm the one who gives him all the crap for that. He's not a very deep character. He's not a sensitive guy. He is, I'm here, I want to kill things. That's who I am.
So. What about, now Marianne mentioned Don Cheer is the drill sergeant. And what's that character's name?
Sergeant Merwin J. Toomey.
Toomey, yes. And yes. You mentioned it, I forgot what it was. And he... doing a pretty outstanding job, I guess.
Oh, wonderful.
Anytime you have a drill sergeant or a drill instructor, it's usually a part you can get your teeth into. Have a lot of fun with
it. It's interesting because in the movie with Matthew Broderick, Christopher Walken actually plays Toomey. And I haven't seen the entire movie, but the clips that I've seen of it, Christopher Walken plays it so slow and quiet and kind of the opposite of what you would expect from a drill sergeant, and it's crazy and really kind of creepy. And so I think Don's taking a little of that and then adding his own spin to it to make it even bigger for the stage.
Josh, can you push that microphone over to Marianne? I mean, I want to ask about, first of all, who's playing the Eugene character, the alter ego for Neil Simon?
The Eugene character is played by Cody Nagel, who is a senior at Lincoln Park Charter School for the Performing Arts. Cody was born to act. He just takes, he is such a natural on the stage, and he really can go from sitting in the house, you know, chomping on a brownie and drinking Coke and be on stage, and instantly he just has that skill, talent, and ability. And for as young as he is, I think he has an incredible future ahead of him if he chooses to act.
I don't know how many other soldiers we have left. I'm not sure where we're...
Well, we have another one, Adam Polowitz, who plays... Help me out.
Roy Selridge.
Roy Selridge. Adam is another natural talent who hopes to go on to be in films. His character is really one of the funniest because he has a habit of mispronouncing words and... I think
not the brightest.
He'll bring down the house with a...
And this is his first show, too.
Yes.
And he's doing phenomenally.
If we didn't say it, you wouldn't know it.
Yeah.
Exactly. We have Montana Simpson, who's just a doll baby. Montana is... I like to say, and I think when I... his profile, Montana is just a true gentleman. The very first night of rehearsal, I went out to leave, and Montana had left, and he was circling the parking lot. And I said, Montana, did you forget something? He said, no, I saw some cars in the parking lot, and I wanted to wait until you left to make sure you were safe. I mean, who does that?
Yeah.
That's the type of young man he is. And he's that type of man in the show. That part of him, he has the privilege of playing that. And you'll enjoy him tremendously. We have Amy Kennard, as we said earlier, and Amy is just a pro. I mean, Amy is so good at what she does. She looks like $1 million in this. Allison Therese is young and lovely, and she makes a beautiful love interest for Cody Nagel. Did I forget anybody?
This is the middle play of what's known as the Eugene Trilogy, right?
Correct.
Brighton Beach Memoirs was the first one, which the Little Theater's already done.
We've already done, yes.
Then Biloxi Blues, and then the last one is Broadway Bound, which I've never seen. I assume that's Neil Simon's semi-autobiographical story of when he decided he was going to start writing plays.
Exactly. I have not read Broadway Bound. I look forward to it because I feel confident we will do it one day at the Little Theater. They are all very much semi-autobiographical. I think Biloxi Blues had a really special place in Neil Simon's heart because he tackled subjects that were a little more difficult. I believe he wrote it in the 50s. I may be wrong.
He's been around a long time. He's still alive, but he's well up in his 80s now, I think.
Yes, I'm sure I'm wrong. I think he wrote it in the 70s. But he just tackled subjects, and he had a difficult childhood from what I have learned about him. And he brought that out, and he talked about things that probably made a lot of people uncomfortable at the time. And I think these young men could probably all relate, because everyone in this show, all of the cast members, have had to change their hair for this show. And that may sound like a silly, simple thing, but yet it's taken every one of them, maybe except Josh, out of their comfort zones. And so it helps you to relate to the characters themselves and to what's going on and to what Neil Simon must have been thinking when he wrote this play.
Now, when I think of Neil Simon, and I suppose this is a generational thing, I instantly think of The Odd Couple.
Oh, of course.
That is, you know, Neil Simon,
Odd
Couple.
Oh, my gosh, Tom DeLaSanta.
Yeah, and then we go from there, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, he's written a ton of plays.
He has.
Many of the others are not autobiographical, but they take from his life, you know. Because he started out as a writer for, like, Carl Reiner and
yes.
Sid Caesar, and these guys are looking at me like, who the hell are these people?
You and I know Dave, so
yeah,
we've got
I know.
This connection.
I never saw the Sid Caesar show, but I know who he was. These were early TV comedians. They had comedy hours and so on, and Neil Simon wrote for them.
He wrote for them, and we did his first play, which was Come Blow Your Horn, and Bob Craig actually directed that. That was his first show to direct, and it was a lot of fun. I don't believe it had the autobiographical tone that this trilogy does. I think the trilogy probably has the most of Neil Simon himself in it that any of the other plays do.
This show opens this weekend, right?
It does. It opens on Friday, and we would love for it to be standing room only. So buy your tickets online. It's very simple to do, bltgroup.org, or you can still call the theater between 7 and 9. We are still keeping our old patterns because a lot of people, again, don't want to leave their comfort zones and get online.
So it opens this Friday night. It runs through the weekend.
Friday and Saturday at 8, Sunday at 2:30. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday next week at 7:30, Friday and Saturday at 8 o'clock.
So once it opens, the only night that's dark is Monday.
Monday, correct.
Theaters all over the world are dark on Monday.
Yes,
nobody does shows on Monday. Give the actors a rest. This play won the Tony Award. I didn't realize this. For Best Play in 1985.
Yes, it did.
And won the Tony. So that says something right there. What about the sets, Grant? Does it all take place? Obviously, much of this, I assume much of it takes place in a barracks, right?
Oh yeah. The main backdrop is the guy's barracks. Then of course we have the that all stays on the entire time. We use the flies and the curtains to kind of move forward on the stage and kind of therefore move forward through the different scenes. But the barracks is truly the main backdrop of the whole play.
Mm-hmm. Do you have, Josh? I mean, like, typical boot camp bunk beds?
Yep. We have an upper bunk and a lower bunk.
Uh-huh.
And we have 6 beds total, or including the bunk beds count as 2 beds. And we also have a latrine that gets mentioned a lot in the play. My character has to go clean the latrines.
Oh, that has to be done, yes.
Yeah.
Well, any Army story is going to, I mean, if it's, you know, boot camp or whatever, is going to have those scenes. It's just, I mentioned it because it's a little bit hard to do on stage. You know, in a movie, it's no big deal. You know, you cut to the latrine shot and then back to the barracks, but live on stage, and you can't do that, you know.
Yeah, we've done a really great job, the set designers and everyone, making it work with the wings and everything like that, making sure we all have our different spaces where people can go. Sean Donovan, he's just done an amazing job with everything. The entire backdrop, it looks real. You would not guess it's paint if I didn't just say it.
Tech director, your set builder, is that who does it?
He's our set designer and all that. Yeah. So he always does amazing stuff. I mean, the bunks, the foot lockers, the backdrop, it's beautiful, all of it.
I'm assuming, I've never read any biography of Neil Simon, but I'm guessing he would have been in the service in the early 50s, maybe late 40s, something like that.
It was 1943.
He was actually in the Army Air Force Reserve.
Oh, okay. But it was in the 40s? Was that long ago? Does it specify that in the show, or does it just...
Yeah, the year is 1943.
Okay.
So war's just kicking up.
That's right. That would have been right in the middle of World War II. Pearl Harbor was December of 41, right at the tail end of 41. And World War II didn't end until 45. So the heat of the battle, huh?
Yep, right in the thick of it.
Is that referred to at all?
Very, very briefly. You know, the show, you know, it uses the war as kind of the setting ground of why all of these characters are here. But in actuality, it's not the basis of the show. It's more about kind of, as far as I take it, it's more about kind of societal pressures and how everyone is kind of dealing with, you know, the metaphorical other in kind of America and kind of the world at the time.
Mm. Well, I only mention it because going to boot camp in 1943 in the middle of a world war, that's a lot different than going to boot camp today or even during other conflicts. I mean, that was the big one, World War II.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. For Eugene's romantic interludes, you use like a side of the stage, or you light another part or something like that?
Center stage. We basically just kind of take the flies down, or not the flies, the curtains. Mm-hmm. Take the curtains down, put them in front of them, and that gives us time to kind of get the barracks ready for the next scenes and all that.
What you got to do in theater, and for folks who don't go to live theater on a regular basis, maybe you've seen some of the live musicals that television has tried in the last few years.
They try.
Same reaction. I thought I was going to gag on Sound of Music when they did that live on TV. And I got to be honest with you, it's only one I watched because I thought, I can't take this. What are they doing to these shows?
I do want to add, Dave, that I was told that on Broadway now, the cast pretty much does a lot of the scene changes, and we have adopted that, and the cast is doing everything. We have Sis Fleming backstage and Wendy McLean, and they are doing props, and they are helping with all of the items, but the guys are pretty much moving everything.
That happens. I've seen theater in many different countries, Stratford in Canada, Shaw Festival, Equity shows in Pittsburgh. That's pretty much de rigueur now. The lights go down and the cast members take off some of the stuff and bring on the next stuff. It's part of theater. It's suspension of disbelief, you know.
Makes a little bit more, gives the actors a little bit more connection to the physical show as well.
So back to my, when I hear the name Neil Simon, I instantly think of The Odd Couple, which I got to be honest with you, I can laugh at that show just by thinking of a couple of lines, you know. That's not spaghetti.
I think the play, too, makes me laugh more than the movie.
Oh, definitely.
And when I think of really doing it at Butler Little Theater, it was the most fun.
So my point is this as funny as The Odd Couple, or are there some semi-serious notes that are introduced here? Could we call it like I saw one show that was billed as a human comedy, which was lovely, you know, it was very funny, but there was a lot of real life in it, too. How would you categorize this, Josh?
I would say there's definitely some funny moments and some good laughs to be had. There's also very serious moments, too, so I would say that it has some elements of a drama as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was the case with the Brighton Beach Memoir. There's some pretty poignant, I don't know if you guys saw this, or pretty poignant moments in that, too, although it's hilarious at times. Well, it's Neil Simon, for goodness sake.
Exactly, and that's what you'll find with this, because the comedy is so real, and you'll be rolling in the aisles, but then I think there'll be a few tears, too, because there are some very, very poignant moments, and Josh is one of them, and come and see it.
Well, it won the Tony for Best Play. Not every Neil Simon show was a smash hit. You know, he had some that were so-so, had a couple of duds, you know. But most of his stuff's pretty good. When you write that many plays, not everything is going to be perfect, you know. Odd Couple.
We do love it.
Even the, you know, there was a female version of The Odd Couple where they changed everything around, where Oscar and Felix were played by two women. And then the dates that they were going to have that night, the Pigeon Sisters. It was like the Pigeon Brothers or something like that. I've never seen it, but I know that they did it. Yeah. Neil Simon's the second in his so-called Eugene trilogy, the middle show of his semi-autobiographical series, Biloxi Blues, covering his story as a young Army recruit at boot camp in Biloxi, Mississippi. Opens this Friday night at the Butler Little Theater. And Marianne Snyder, producer, you say tickets are still available. You can do, are people catching on to doing that online now?
They definitely are. We're very, very pleased that it is picking up. And there again, Bob Craig, who is the director of this show, was the one instrumental in creating that for us. And it's been a wonderful thing.
Now, when I get shows, tickets online to see a show in Pittsburgh, I always have to pay an extra fee.
Only charge $10 extra. No, there is no fee. No fee. $13 tickets, whether you buy them online or at the door. There's okay. No fee.
Because, you know, you buy for a Pittsburgh, it's $4 extra for every ticket.
Yes, we do not have that.
Okay, good. And you can, if you're ordering online, you can do it anytime. Phone
middle
line,
of the night, doesn't matter. Yes.
People man the box office by phone from 7 to 9 p.m.
Correct.
Hey, if you've never been to the Butler Little Theater, it's a good show to make your debut there. Where is it? It's right at the bottom of North Main Street Hill, about a half a block off Main Street, right at the bottom of North Main Street Hill. I think there's a sign there, isn't it?
There is a sign. Yeah. Yes.
We thank our guests. They're all members of the cast, probably all starting to let their hair grow already because in another 2 weeks they won't have to worry about keeping it short anymore. We thank John Carlson and Grant Clark and Josh Donovan for being with us here today, and Marianne Snyder, of course, who's producing the show. Thanks all. Great to talk with you.
Thanks for having us.
Laughing already. I haven't even seen the show yet. A Gathering of Authors. It's coming up next on the program, and this happens later this week, Thursday, I believe. Yeah, well, we'll get the details. We have guests coming in to talk about that, and still later on the program today, a chat, a nice sit-down with the superintendent of schools in the Seneca Valley School District. She is Dr. Tracy Vitale. We'll be talking with her a little bit later. Quick break. Back in a couple of minutes with more of the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR.
Attorney General number PA4619.
The following takes place at 2:33 a.m. in the offices of Schneider's 1 Hour.
We're getting a lot of calls tonight, Mr. Schneider.
Sure are, Mike. Schneider's 1 Hour, this is Gary.
Absolutely, Mrs. Davis. We'll be there in 15 minutes. Steve, Mrs. Davis' furnace is out on West Jefferson.
On my way.
Just sit tight, Mr. Miller. We'll see you in a minute. Ashley, the Miller's on Liberty Street.
Got it.
Remember, let them lead you to the problem.
So you can get them comfort in no time.
This is what it's all about. Right, Mr. Schneider?
Being available for people 24/7.
Days, nights, and weekends.
And always arriving on time.
Or you don't pay a dime.
That's the Schneider's 1 Hour code.
Always here to help.
When you need it.
Not just when we feel like it.
All right, Schneider's 1 Hour.
To the rescue.
283-8525.
Schneider's 1 Hour. On time, day or night.
283-8525.
Whether you're a competitive athlete or a weekend warrior, any injury that keeps you on the sidelines is not one worth having. The sports medicine specialist at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers will help you get back into action so you can keep up your lifestyle. Our experts understand that the same treatments for competitive athletes can be used for those who just want to be able to stay active. They accept major insurance plans, including both Highmark and UPMC. Learn more about how you can get back on the field by visiting TriRiversMSK.com.
Attention Alexa users, did you know you can listen to WISR through your Amazon Echo? That's right, Alexa, play WISR.
Playing WISR.
WISR is proud to provide you with the music you love on the devices you use. Radio, computer, tablet, smartphone, and now your Amazon Alexa-enabled device. WISR, we're everywhere you are. Just ask Alexa.
Welcome back, good friends. Nice to have you with us on the program today. And as I have been mentioning for the past couple of days, we're going to be talking on the next segment about an event coming up here in our region in the Oakmont area a little bit later this week. It's called the Gathering of Authors. And we have a couple of guests with us here to give us all the details about it. Let's say hello. They are familiar friends because they've been on the program with us before. Linda Davis is here. Linda, good to see you again.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Yeah. And C. William Davis, also here. Bill, good to see you, too.
Good to see you also.
Yeah. I assume you're going to be part of this gathering of regional authors.
Yes, I'm not only one of the authors, but I'm the master of ceremonies.
Oh, that's great. Well, now, tell me, first of all, Linda, this happens day after tomorrow, right?
Thursday, mm-hmm. the 28th.
In Oakmont? Where is it in Oakmont?
Riverside Landing in Oakmont on Washington Avenue.
And
it doors open at 5 o'clock, and the presentation of the authors is at 6:30.
So explain, because I'm sure many of our listeners have never heard of such a thing, a gathering of authors. They're all going to be there, like at booths or
something?
We're going
to have 11 authors there speaking. They're going to talk about their books. And we're going to have, after that, they're, of course, you know, we'll be selling their books also. So mm-hmm. you can, you know, purchase their books there. We're going to have also authors that have been to other gatherings that we've had, but they're not going to be speaking, but they'll be there, and they're going to also be bringing their books. And we're also going to be having authors that are coming up that will be, you know, the next people coming into our gathering. So every time we have a gathering, we always get new authors. And that's what we do. Then we just have a panel of authors, and they speak and talk about their books and ask questions, and we go from there.
And this is all organized by a publisher that specializes in regional authors, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's Bill's Publishing Company,
mm-hmm.
and they joined us back in 2012, and we've been doing this. This is our 11th one, and it's wonderful. It's gotten bigger and better, I think, each year. It's free to the public, free parking. Cash bar.
Snacks.
Coffee.
Kind of hors d'oeuvre type things.
A guitar player.
I've never been to the Riverside Landing in Oakmont, but it sounds very nice. It's got to be right along the Allegheny.
It has to be, right?
Yeah.
It's right
next door to the Yacht Club.
Yeah, and right across from the Greek Orthodox Hall.
Okay.
In Oakmont.
Is it far from the bridge, the big new bridge?
About 4 blocks.
Oh, okay. Very close.
Four, maybe five.
5 blocks, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The street, I don't know whether it's the main drag of Oakmont or not, but it runs right parallel to the river the whole way up there.
Above the tracks and below the tracks.
Yes, above and below, yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is below the tracks.
I was looking through the, and I don't know whether this is the list of people that are going to be there on Thursday, or...
They're the ones speaking.
Oh, they're the ones speaking?
Yes.
Well, can you go over that? Can you run down the list, Bill?
Sure, I can. There are, as she said, 11 authors, including myself. Probably the most prolific author that we have in our group is attorney Chip Bell from New Kensington.
Mm-hmm.
And he has the Jake Sullivan series, and he has come out with book number 10. And it is a series of intrigue and adventure. So Chip's been with this for quite some time. He's one of the original gathering of authors. There were 8, including myself. And now my wife and the publishing firm have built it up to well over 35. So it is growing. The next author is Mary Jo Sontag. She is from Pittsburgh. And by the way, Chip Bell is from New Kensington.
Mm-hmm.
Mary Jo is from Pittsburgh, and her book is Write If You Live to Get There. And it's a family history that takes you back 100 years or more, back to even the days of the covered wagons, and the people who lived it, and from her family.
Hmm. And this is something that we won't have in the future, because nobody writes letters anymore. It's always an email to a quick email with incorrect spelling and punctuation and emoticons. And did you ever think about that? Even reconstructing people's lives, which a lot of researchers are able to do by looking at letters from the past, it won't happen anymore.
Nope.
Do you know where Mary Jo Sontag is from, Bill?
She is from Pittsburgh. Gerald Miller is from Murraysville. And he tells the story. It's a novel that tells of the last surviving member of a well-to-do Pittsburgh family.
Hmm.
It's the story of family secrets, a quiet life, and an unexpected sharp turn.
I always like stories that have a local connection. I think there's extra fun to read.
Yes. Amy Smith is from Rogersville, PA. and it's Confessions of a Burnout ER Nurse.
Hmm.
And it offers, it's nonfiction, obviously, and it tells of the bad times, sometimes good times, and even sometimes hilarious situations that arise in the ER. And Amy says that's only the beginning because there's much more to it than that.
I'm looking at, I don't know, that is that her picture?
Yes.
On the cover of her book there. Nurses don't dress like that anymore, have you noticed?
Yeah.
That's the, I want to say old-time uniform, but that was standard issue for nurses up until recent years.
Yes.
Absolutely. She's a real-life nurse, by the way. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Jana Carlisle's from Verona, and her book is Birds of a Feather. It's a high-flying story about the desire for adventure and freedom and what happens when that runs in smack into a steadfast opposition. Therese Rocco is the first assistant police chief in any city, and it happens to be Pittsburgh. She is what I would call a hero. She's fearless in the face of danger. She created a method of criminal investigations that are still in use to this day. Therese is known as the Rock.
Hmm. And boy, when she was named an assistant police chief in Pittsburgh, that was quite a few years ago. She would have been in the vanguard for sure. There probably weren't that many female police officers to begin with, let alone assistant chief. Yeah.
Trevor Boyce is from Virginia Beach, Virginia. He wrote a book called Boarding School Beach Bums, and it's basically the story. It kind of follows sort of the Beach Boys type era. Trevor was actually lived a surfing life from childhood to this very day, and he decided to write a book about his travels and about the magical and memorable times in his life doing so.
Hmm.
The Table Ladies is a very interesting story. It is about eight ladies from Oakmont. They are at Longwood in Oakmont at a retirement home.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided to get together and write a book, a mystery, together. And the book is called Where's Laura? And it will be presented that evening by Ann Ducanis and Trevor Boyce's real mother, Doreen Boyce. So actually, son and mother will be there with two separate books. But this was a really interesting situation because of the fact that eight people got together that met every Thursday, I believe
Tuesday
for lunch and decided to write a book. And Where's Laura is about a group of women like them who have a friend called Laura in a situation like that that disappears, and they don't know what happened to her, and that's the mystery of it all.
That's fascinating. There is, I'm trying to think of the name. There was an Irish book, I have it on my bookshelf. I think it's called Finbar's Hotel. I could be wrong. It's several years ago. But they took about 10 female Irish writers, and they each wrote a chapter for this story. So, and it had to be sequential, I mean, so they couldn't jump all over the place. But when it was the next person's turn, they would read what they had so far, and they would write the next chapter. I'm pretty sure it was called Finbar's Hotel. It wasn't bad, but it had big names. Maeve Binchy, you know, these were well-known Irish writers.
Yes.
I love this. Where's Laura? How many of them? Eight, did you say?
Eight. Unfortunately, we lost one. One of them has passed away since last year. But seven of them will be there, two of them presenting at the author's table that evening. The other five will be at a table connected to the author's table, and I'm quite sure they will contribute also. Heath Kipp is from Natrona Heights. Unfortunately, he was to be here today. Unfortunately, he had to undergo emergency back surgery.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we wish him well.
Yeah. And he's doing all right. He had a little bit of a setback yesterday, but he will be there. And his is the band book. Heath actually dated my daughter quite a few years ago. He is more or less like an adopted another son, and his family's been friends with our family for years. And he has been involved in music, has been a band leader for years since he was a teenager. And it's the secrets and the tricks to make any band successful, but also secrets and tricks that you could use for any endeavor. He has accumulated all of this information over the years, what is successful, what is not, what you should be doing, what you shouldn't be doing. It is a book that almost everyone can learn successful tips from, no matter what business you're in. Of course, it is directed more toward bands, and it has become a very popular book because obviously music is big in this area.
I assume he was a band director or played in a band or something?
He started out playing in a band and became the leader of several bands in the area, and is still in music. He's not doing anything with the bands right now, obviously, because now he's an author. And he's promoting that part of it, but I would not be surprised if the next time you hear of a band in the area that's very popular, you might see the name Heath Kipp.
The band book. You know what I think? I think of the Music Man, you know, Robert Preston. The great Meredith Willson musical, you know. We have trouble right here in River City.
Sam Hazo is from Pittsburgh.
Oh, and Sam Hazel.
Yes.
He's going to be there.
Yes.
Oh, gosh, he's one of my
heroes. Yes, and you, so you one know of my who heroes. Sam is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thursday night.
The Pittsburgh That Stays With You. That's his book, and it's a portrait of the city. According to Sam, it's a memoir in progress.
Hmm.
The publishing firm we work with, Word Association, calls it a work of art.
Hmm.
So, he will be there. He's part of the gathering of authors now.
I mean, I haven't seen Mr. Hazo, Professor Hazo, in quite a few years. He was the director of the now-defunct International Poetry Forum in Pittsburgh, which is where I first came in contact with him and saw him many times. He would, in addition to reading his own poetry occasionally, he would always introduce, you know, when you went to the poetry forum, he would introduce who the guest poet was going to be, who's going to be reading it. He was just a wonderful guy. Man, that'd be great. I'd love to see him again.
Hmm. And then I guess I'm last on the list because I'm the master of ceremonies. So my books, as a lot of you people that are out there have already known since I've been here before with Dave, the Clive Alliston Mystery Series. There are three books in the series, and I am presently working on book four.
You know, I've had people ask me, Bill, is there going to be another Clive Alliston book?
Well, I will give you a little bit about it. The title is Lady Lethal, The Warrior. Now, I have begun the book, and my wife, being my typist, since I don't type even close to as well as she does, I write everything longhand the way Hemingway did. She read the very beginning of it, and her first comment was, "Oh my, is he going to have his hands full this time? Beware the wrath of a woman." It is going to be, as usual, very fast-paced. It is going to be a very unusual situation. It doesn't start out in Pennsylvania. It begins along the coast of Louisiana. 2 years later, moves to North Carolina along the shore and eventually works its way right into Clive Alliston's lap in Pennsylvania. And as my wife said, he will have his hands full this time. I expect to have that finished in the spring, but the book I'm going to be talking about at the gathering is Whispers, Echoes, and Wisps of the Wind. And it is a book of short stories, slightly mystical, magical, on the fence. Could they have happened in real life or maybe not?
Mm-hmm.
Uplifting, good endings, very uplifting endings. It has won an award, a literary award, the Taz Literary Award. I came in second place, which was really a surprise to me. And that is the book I will be speaking about that evening.
Mm-hmm.
And as Linda said, there will be other authors there and some authors that are about to be published. So it's a very complete program.
I have to mention for listeners who maybe weren't with us when I chatted earlier, some time ago with Bill, his Clive Alliston series. Clive Alliston is a fictional sheriff, he's a lawman, and he appears in all of the three that you've done,
yes,
so far, right? The trilogy, yes. And a bunch of the action takes place in Butler County.
He is a Butler. For a long time, people would ask me what county, and I wouldn't tell them. And that was right as the first book came out. He is a Butler County Sheriff, fictitious. Smith Falls is also a fictitious name, Smith Falls, PA. But in actuality, it is Saxonburg, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And just recently, through my son, we made a connection with Clint Eastwood.
Really?
Yes. When Arnie Palmer, unfortunately, passed away, there was a memorial service at Latrobe Airport. My son is director of maintenance at VNO Aviation. He had the opportunity, actually, to run into Clint Eastwood and sat down and talked to him for probably the best part of a half an hour, and happened to tell Clint about the fact that I was an author and about the series, and that it was similar to Jesse Stone, that type of a series. And he happened to mention the fact that the Tom Berenger's agency had been looking at it, and I guess when Clint heard that, he went, oh, Tom's looking at it? I need some information. So they have the information. Of course, at this point in time, I have absolutely no idea where that's going to go. I hope to get a phone call one of these days about it, but the information is there, and we'll see where it goes. I'd love to be sitting on Main Street in Saxonburg in a director's chair beside the director someday.
Can't believe your son talked to him for half an hour. I'd be scared to death.
Yeah.
He's a guy you don't want to make him irritated in any way, you know.
He said he was very, very, very kind. Very kind gentleman, you know. He's met quite a few people while he's been in the aviation, actually.
Yeah, well, that shows you, by the way, Arnie's, I think yesterday was the anniversary of his death.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it was one. He died 26th of September last year, 1 year ago yesterday.
Wow.
And his funeral drew, there were probably more private jets at Arnold Palmer Regional Airport that day than there will ever be, because they were flying in from everywhere. Eastwood would have known him from Pebble Beach, I'm sure.
Yes.
And the Monterey Peninsula out there. So, yeah, it was 1 year ago yesterday that he died. Well, that's terrific. Boy, who knows, you know? Sometimes these projects take years to develop.
Well,
you never know.
Generally, I found out that whenever your information goes into somewhere like that, they line it up in order. And it just takes a while to reach that point. And I don't, as I said, know where that's going to go, but it would be a very interesting day if I got a phone call from Malpasso Productions.
Now, in your not yet finished, come out at an unspecified date later, is Clive Alliston still in it? Or?
It's the Clive Alliston mystery series,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, but yes. There's a woman is introduced.
A nemesis, a major problem for Clive is coming into it. And even though it's called Lady Lethal, it does not give away much about, other than the fact that apparently the problem is female. But it's something very unexpected. The basis of the problem is unexpected.
Whenever you speak, I'll talk to you, because you're here, and you're going to be one of the regional authors who speak at this event. By the way, folks, if you've joined us a little bit late, just got in your car, this gathering of authors is the day after tomorrow, this Thursday evening at Riverside Landing in Oakmont. Doors open at 5 p.m. The author presentations begin at 6:30. And Linda Davis, did you say that there's no admission charge? It's free?
No admission. It's free.
Yeah.
Free.
If you want to buy a drink or a
free
snack
parking,
or something, that's fine.
But. Cash bar.
Cash bar. Also, there have been some businesses that have contributed gift certificates,
mm-hmm.
which will be, I'll say, raffled off free. Parking is free. It is an entire entertainment evening that's wrapped around literature.
So you have a chance to get a door prize without buying a ticket, in other words, huh?
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. So your turn will come among these 10 or 12 authors that you've mentioned. Do you get X number of minutes? Is that what they give you to speak?
5 minutes per author.
Wow.
We like to keep it moving.
Mm-hmm.
The program, which you have, pretty much gives an idea of the bio. Most of the people will know about the authors themselves, so that relieves them of having to explain who they are. And they just have five minutes to explain their books, which leaves more time for that part of it.
Now, you're talking about your latest work, which is a book of short stories, right?
Yes.
So what are you going to do? Just pick up like one story and say, here's a sample? Or, I mean, you only have 5 minutes, Bill.
It's 5 minutes is a lot longer than you think. I can probably cover at least half of the stories as far as exactly what they're about. And believe me when I tell the crowd, for example, Legend of Painted Pony, that leads you to believe it might be something about Native American, I can give you information, just a few lines, that will probably leave the crowd hanging on, what could this be about?
Hmm.
And they are all sort of mystical, magical, but they're so close to real life. Could they really have happened, or maybe not?
Well, I'm not a big sci-fi reader. In fact, I don't, even the famous sci-fi authors never really turned me on. But mystical magic, mystical realism, Gabriel Garcia Marquez was a master at that, the South American writer, one of my favorites. So I'm into that. Yeah, I'm into that.
Well, you would probably love the last one in the book, which is Harley Rose and His Miracles, about an older gentleman who is in a retirement nursing home facility, and a new young nurse comes in. This takes place in the 50s. A new young nurse comes in to take over as head nurse, runs into Harley Rose, and finds out that there's something very unusual about him. And the fact that he seems to just be on the edge of, is some of the things he does miracles or not? And what she finds out in the very end just takes the floor right up from under her, because she can't believe what has happened. That's the type of stories that they are, and they're very uplifting, happy, good endings.
Did you know you wanted to, because you were an engineer, right?
I was in the electronics field.
Projects and stuff like that?
I was in the electronics field for the government, through Westinghouse, and also for ATI, Allegheny Ludlum.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I wasn't in the literature field. But it was a love I've had since high school. So it just sort of led that way as a hobby at first, and now in retirement, this is what I love to do.
A gathering of authors, folks. Everyone is welcome to this, right? Don't need any special connections or anything.
Huh? Everyone.
It's day after tomorrow, evening, Thursday evening, Riverside Landing in Oakmont. Doors open at 5. Author presentations begin at 6:30. In the program, which Linda mailed to me in advance for me to look at, you have a photograph. This apparently is one of the earlier gatherings.
Yes, that was in December.
Mm-hmm.
We also had the gathering also at Riverside Landing at that time. It's the first time we ever went to commercial, as we call it, venue, and it worked out beautifully.
Well, it's a nice setting. It looks rather informal. The crowd in attendance all has seats there, and then all the authors are spread out across the front like a dais across
right.
the front of the
You're
room.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So you don't waste any time having to bring people up, and they're right there. When it's their turn, you just speak. Huh?
And there will be a photographer there also. So there will be pictures taken if they would like to have a picture taken with the author.
I'm sure that, and all the authors have the books there, of course.
All the authors.
Want to buy a book, I'm sure you could get them to autograph it for you, sign it for you.
Absolutely. And also tax-free. So.
Wow. Can't beat that.
Can't beat that. Yeah.
Hey, it's nice to see the two of you again. I always enjoy chatting with you.
It was good to talk to you.
Thank you so much for this.
Linda Davis and C. William Davis. If you're looking for him online, I feel comfortable calling him Bill because I know him, but it's C. William Davis, right?
The third, yes.
Yeah, and if you don't do it that way, you're going to come up with somebody else in Montana or something. So
yes.
If you're looking for him online. So, nice to have you here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for telling me about this. We're going to take a break. Our final guest today will be joining us in just a minute or so. It's a chat with the superintendent of schools in the Seneca Valley School District. It's one of the biggest school districts in western Pennsylvania. She is Dr. Tracy Vital. We'll be talking with her about what's happening in Seneca Valley. And we'll do that in just a couple of minutes here on It's Your Turn on WISR. Tomorrow's program, Bob Dandoy from Butler Downtown will be with us. Also on tomorrow's program, we're going to be talking about rebuilding cities after a disaster. Pretty topical, right, with everything that's happened in Texas and Louisiana and Miami and now Puerto Rico. What a month we had of natural disasters, and then the earthquake in Mexico City. That's tomorrow. We have some other stuff for you on tomorrow's program as well, so I hope you can be with us then. We'll take a quick break and be back to talk with the Seneca Valley superintendent here on It's Your Turn on WISR, back after these words.
When is the best time to talk to your family about staying in touch during a disaster? When floodwaters reach your door? When wildfires are engulfing the edge of your neighborhood, or an earthquake is destroying buildings. When a tornado is tearing through town, or a hurricane strikes, or is the best time perhaps today? During a disaster, you may not be able to stay in touch with your family or friends as easily as you think. And it's not always as simple as using your cell phone. That's why now is the time to take action. Go to ready.gov/communicate and make your emergency plan today. Don't wait. Communicate. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Hi, it's Kayla Molzan. I'll be at Swift Audiology with WISR on Thursday, September 8th as they do free hearing screenings. Kate from Coffee with Kate will be with me as well. We'll be giving away lots of prizes. Swift Audiology will be doing the free hearing screenings. They're located on South Duffy Road in Butler Township. It's all free. Did you know that hearing loss has recently been linked to an increased risk for developing Alzheimer's and dementia? So stop by Swift Audiology in Butler, the rear of the Deschamps Plaza, Thursday, September 28th, 2 till 4, with WISR.
Welcome, listeners. Nice to have you with us. Boy, it's been a great program thus far here on It's Your Turn on a Tuesday, and I guarantee you our final guest will be interesting. She is the superintendent of schools in the Seneca Valley School District. And she is Dr. Tracy Vital. And Dr. Vital, it's nice to meet you. I can't believe, I know you've been superintendent there for several years, and this is the first time we've ever had a chance to speak. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
You have been superintendent at Seneca Valley for how long?
I'm starting my seventh year.
Seneca Valley is, of course, one of the largest school districts in western Pennsylvania, for that matter, one of the largest school districts in the state. Do you have a ballpark figure on your student census for this year? It doesn't have to be an exact number, but...
Well, I do have an exact number. Last month, I gave a report to our school board. This school year, we are at 7,187 students, which is an increase of about 45 to 50 students from last year and over 60 from 2 years ago. So we are still experiencing growth, which is great. It's not significant growth, but it's manageable growth, and we certainly welcome that.
And I don't have to tell you that you're unusual in all of Pennsylvania to experience any growth at all. Most school districts are experiencing at least a small decline, in some cases a pretty drastic drop in their student population.
Yes, I am aware of that across the state. We are very fortunate. I give a lot of credit to our communities, our townships, and our municipalities. We cover 9 municipalities, and several of our townships Certainly spend a lot of time on strategic planning. 68% of our students come from Cranberry Township, one of those municipalities that we work with, and Cranberry and Jackson and townships and municipalities that spend time strategically planning certainly help with our student enrollment.
So your geographical territory includes Cranberry Township, Jackson Township, which is just to the north of Cranberry. Evans City, that area, is that's still in your school district, right?
Yes.
Okay.
We also have Fullward, Lancaster Township, Callery, Harmony, Seven Fields, and Zelianople. So we do work closely with all nine municipalities, and all of our local government officials are pretty diligent about what can we constantly be doing to bring work to the area. I also serve on the Butler County Development Corporation Authority, and we're always looking at what can we do as a region, not just at Seneca Valley, but what can we do to support the city, what can we do to support the county, and what can we do as a region to attract work to our area. And I think that certainly speaks to why some of our school districts are still growing in this area of the state.
Mm-hmm. And you have continued. For many years, much of your growth was in Cranberry. You've had quite a bit of growth in Jackson in recent years.
Yes, we have. And that township, again, is where our high school, our secondary campus is located, three of our secondary buildings. We have a 7-8 middle school, a 9-10 high school, and an 11-12 high school. And those three buildings are in the Jackson Township corridor. We work closely with their police and the local planning officials. And we are seeing some of that growth move north of Cranberry, although Cranberry is still growing as well.
Mm-hmm. What about, that's your secondary structure. I ask this only because, you know, it used to be almost all school districts were divided up the same way. You had elementary, that was K through 6. You had junior high, you had senior high. Now they're all kind of different models all over the place. What about your primary grades, your elementary grades? How many buildings, first of all, Superintendent?
We have 9 buildings. We have Hain Elementary School, which is a kindergarten through fourth grade building in the Cranberry Township area. We have Conequenessing Valley Elementary School, which is a K-4 building in this northern corridor, right there next to Zelianople. We have Evans City Elementary School, which is in Evans City, which is a K-4 building. There's also a 5-6 Evans City Middle School attached to that building, so two separate schools under one roof. At Hain, we also have a 5-6 building, again, two separate schools under one roof, K-4 and 5-6. We have Rowan, that's in the Cranberry area, that is a K-4 building as well. And the middle school, intermediate high school, and senior high are on the campus, although the intermediate high school and senior high school often exchange classes and students walk between the buildings depending on what level of a class that they may need in different buildings.
Mm-hmm. You are maintaining a model that has quite a few separate buildings. Many districts seem to be consolidating in recent years, certainly within the past decade. No plans for that in the future at Seneca Valley? You're satisfied with the way you're divided up now?
We are very pleased with our grade configuration. I have been in many school districts. I think if I'm counting correctly, this is my 6th school district in my 25th year of being an educator. And I very much appreciate the configuration with a K-4 component, a 5-6 component, 7-8, and then the 9th and 10th graders are separated from the 11th and 12th, but they have the ability to go back and forth between buildings. And I think developmentally, those are certainly the right grade configurations. One thing that we're also very pleased about is that we do still have neighborhood schools, Rowan, Hain, Evans City, Conequenessing Valley. These are very much neighborhood schools where the community is embedded and is supportive of the school building. I don't see us changing that configuration. We've done a lot of research on developmentally how to divide children up. And also because we're not declining in enrollment like many districts are, there would be no need to downsize buildings to be more efficient. So we think we're running not only efficiently with 9 buildings, but we're also running in a way that's following best practice when it comes to the developmental needs of children.
Are all of these buildings, from a physical plant standpoint, are they all in pretty good shape? No immediate needs for rehabbing or anything like that?
Our oldest building is a 1939 build in Evans City. The school board has been in discussions publicly for at least 2 years about where to place fiscal money first when it comes to capital improvements. So by all means, I think that will be the first building that we will begin investing more money into. The district did a feasibility study last year. And in that feasibility study, we were asking the community at large what they would like to see, where they feel we should be putting capital improvement money, what are their priorities as a community. And also, we had architects review all of our buildings to make recommendations of where we should be placing money in the future strategically for capital improvements. So the first building that needs our attention is the Evans City building. And the board has been deliberating whether or not to renovate the building on site, to build new behind the building, or to build new on a piece of property they own called the Ehrman Farm property. And they own about 100 acres there, a little over 100 acres that they could build new. So they're deliberating right now. They had 12 architects put in a proposal to either renovate or build new at Evans City. They've narrowed those proposals down to 4. They interviewed those 4 architects publicly, and now they are deliberating who to hire as an architect for that next project.
We're chatting, listeners, in case you're just tuning in, listening to the radio in the car, whatever. We're chatting with the superintendent of schools in the Seneca Valley School District. She is Dr. Tracy Vitale. This is the latest in our series, over the past couple of weeks, we're chatting with top administrators and school districts around the region just to get kind of an overview. Where do we stand? We know that in many districts, student population is down. We're checking on that, among other things. There's nothing controversial here. We're just kind of getting an overview of the districts. I'm looking at the numbers you shared, Dr. Vitale, with the Seneca Valley student population now close to 7,200. Have you passed Butler and are now the largest school district in Butler County? Do you know?
I don't want to speak for Butler, but I was in a meeting this week, and that was a question posed to several superintendents, and my understanding with the Butler superintendent present is that Seneca Valley has passed Butler. I'd also like to be on record that while we have 7,187 students, we transport over 8,000 students. So those could be students needing special services in the city at a special school. Those could be parochial students. So we transport over 8,000, but we have 7,187 physically in our buildings. And then in addition, we have cyber students that we are servicing, and we have partnerships with 40 other public school districts across the state. So when I give you 7,187, those are students that are physically in our 9 buildings.
Some of our listeners may not realize, for example, that under Pennsylvania state law, school districts have to provide transportation for students who are going to private or parochial schools. So let me ask you a little bit. I was looking at the Seneca Valley School District website in preparation for our chat today, and I saw a couple of things that piqued my interest, and I jotted some notes down to ask you about. One thing was something called the Seneca Valley Academy of Choice. Now, that is a phrase that I have not seen anywhere else in local school districts. Can you tell us, Dr. Vitale, what that's all about, the Seneca Valley Academy of Choice?
Yes, we are very proud of the Seneca Valley Academy of Choice. Don't quote me, but I want to say we're on about the 9th, 10th year of this program. This is a school within a school. It's a cyber and arts program where students can take an online class, solely online, taught by Seneca Valley teachers, and not necessarily meet their teacher face-to-face, if that's what they choose. Or they can take, which we feel is one of the best versions of the program, a hybrid course. And in the hybrid course, they would be taking an online class, but they would also meet with their teacher face-to-face so many days a week, whether that would be 2 days or 3 days a week. So that would be a hybrid or a blended course. And we have more than 1,200 students engaged in a hybrid or blended course, which means a combination of online and face-to-face. We have 80 full-time cyber students that are taking all cyber classes. And we have over 4,000 students enrolled in our cyber program from other school districts across the state who have recognized what we are doing. What this program also allows for is quite a bit of flexibility for our students who are heavily engaged in our musical programs, in our dance programs. We offer ballet. We offer many other forms of dance as well. And students who are on the art side of dance or music that want to, for instance, maybe I'm a gymnast and I need a significant amount of time to train full time, I could take my gymnastic classes in the morning and then work on my cyber classes in the evening or vice versa. So the cyber program offers more flexibility for students to get their education in a more flexible way, but still in a quality way, with Seneca Valley teachers being the teacher of record.
I've talked formally and informally, quite frankly, with educators locally, regional educators who have been concerned about the advent of cyber schools, charter schools, because of financial drain on the district. It sounds like your concerns went far beyond that. You're talking about what sounds like a more rigorous educational program with you. You're not just worried about a financial drain, but you're looking at higher education.
Absolutely, and I'd like to point out, aside from the cyber classes, we also have partnerships with the University of Pittsburgh for students to take classes here through their curriculum in classes like calculus. We have a partnership with Carlo in their accounting program for business majors. We have a partnership with the Beaver County Community College with aviation. And most recently, we joined the BC3 program, the Butler County Community College, to offer introduction to philosophy to high school students as well. So we have taken the approach, instead, by all means, you know, money is certainly a topic in education all the time, but we've taken the approach, instead of looking at the amount that the Pennsylvania school, the home school, must pay cyber charters, we instead many years ago said, well, why are students going there? Is there any way we can combat this issue? We know the arts programs that we have. We know the music programs that we have. Just take a look at the Seneca Valley Band. Take a look at the Seneca Valley Orchestra. We know what we offer. Are we not marketing this correctly? Is it a marketing issue? That was one of the issues. But also, are we not being as flexible as we should be with today's students who want to be a full-time gymnast or who want to be practice ballet every day for 6+ hours, if not 8, and sometimes even more? We can and should still be the school of record in offering these students flexibility with cyber or hybrid so that we can keep them here in our school district. And so I think Seneca Valley, while I've been here 15 years, I've only been in the seat starting my 7th year, and I think my predecessor and the leadership team prior really focused on why are kids going to cyber charter, and we know we can do it better, so why are they going elsewhere? And so we started asking tough questions that instead of being defensive, we worked with our teacher union and our labor unions to say, will you come along with us, help us to make sure that our students are getting quality teaching from our teachers? And they did. We have a great working relationship with our labor unions.
Well, I'm glad I asked you about that. That's a fascinating program, Seneca Valley Academy of Choice. Something else that I noticed, STEM initiatives. That's something that I think most of our listeners would be familiar with, science, technology, engineering, and math. I think I got that right, didn't I? STEM?
Yes.
S-T-E-M. A lot of folks perhaps wouldn't realize that if you're not doing that at the high school level now, you're behind the curve, aren't you?
Absolutely. We began studying STEM probably about 9 or 10 years ago when we had some concerns from the military that they weren't getting enough engineers from colleges. And as you and I both know, it can be problematic if we hire engineers from outside of the country when it comes to the military. So the military was really the first one coming to us saying, we are not preparing enough engineers. And while STEM is so much more than just engineering, that was the initial conversation we began to have about workforce development and what we need in our country. And then that conversation became much larger beyond STEM, also talking about art. So you've probably heard the acronym STEAM. At Seneca Valley, while we're supportive of STEM and STEAM, we decided several years ago that instead of just jumping on the flavor of the day, so to speak, that there's a much deeper discussion here about innovation and creativity. And so when you look at the amount of patents that the United States has versus other countries that we're always being compared to, the United States outperforms every other country when it comes to creativity and innovation. Just look at our patent numbers alone. And we're very proud of that. But we don't want to sit on our laurels. What else could we be doing to prepare students to be engaged in 21st century thinking skills, but also to remember that it's not just about, while science, technology, engineering, art, and math are all very important, there's a much deeper piece that we need to be discussing, and that is creativity and innovation. And if we focus on those pieces, STEM will come along, STEAM will come along. And so while we have concerted efforts in STEM and STEAM, we're also very focused on innovation. And so we've been putting CERC centers in our elementaries. We most recently converted the library at Hayne Elementary, Hayne Middle, and that library is now a creativity center, an innovative creative center. We worked with InventionLand out of the city of Pittsburgh to talk about what might this curriculum look like and how can we deepen children's understanding and thinking when it comes to innovation.
Pretty exciting stuff. Listeners, we have a couple more minutes that we're able to chat with Dr. Tracy Vital. She's the superintendent of schools in the Seneca Valley School District. And we need to take a quick break here, but when we come back, boy, with all of this high-tech stuff, this cutting-edge technology and planning and so on, I'm wondering if they still teach languages. And I don't know. We'll talk about that when we come back. As I said, we have a couple of more minutes left to talk with Superintendent Vital. One of our sponsors on the It's Your Turn program today, and if you're just joining us, by the way, my name is Dave Malarkey, and it's the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn. One of our sponsors is Butler Motor Tours, and they are now taking bookings for some of their trips coming up during the holiday season. You realize how close that is, folks. Yeah, we're a couple of days away from October. Somebody asked me if they're doing that one day shopping in New York City again this year. The answer is yes. How do they do that? It's December 2nd, by the way, December 2nd, New York City shopping. Well, you leave here in western Pennsylvania late at night on a Friday, and you're in one of their comfortable, luxurious coaches all night. You sleep all night if you want to. And then you wake up in the morning, you're in New York City, you can shop, you can sightsee, you can do whatever you want to do, and you get back on the coach at 10 o'clock Saturday night, and you're back here in western Pennsylvania Sunday morning. Pretty neat. Booking now. They're also booking trips for Ogle Bay Park and the Festival of Lights, Light Up Night in Pittsburgh on the Gateway Clipper, Santa Express on the Titusville Railroad, great family outing there. That's in early December, too. You can book online at their website, butlerbus.com. Hey, folks, they've been doing this a while. Butler Motor Tour has been around for 77 years now. They're on South Monroe Street in Butler. Online at butlerbus.com, butlerbus.com. We'll be back in just 1 minute to talk with Dr. Vital. We first have to check the midday lottery numbers from Harrisburg. We'll be right back.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 2525. The pick 3 is 683. The pick 4, 5504. The pick 5, 28903. The wild ball for each of those is 8. The treasure hunt, 10, 15, 24, 28, and 29. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $50,000.
Choices, decisions, quality health care. These are important issues that really hit home. It's a good thing that Concordia Visiting Nurses is here to help. Home health care can help you or your loved one recuperate from an illness, manage a chronic disease, or recover from an injury or operation right in your own home. If you're in need of home health care, choose Concordia Visiting Nurses. Call toll-free at 1-877-352-6200.
Welcome back, friends. A few more questions for our guest, Dr. Tracy Vitale, Superintendent of Schools in the Seneca Valley School Districts. As I mentioned before the break, I'm wondering, with all of this new models for education, these wonderful new ideas, are they still doing things like teaching languages in the Seneca Valley School District? Dr. Vitale.
Absolutely. First, as a former English teacher, I can tell you there's nothing more important to me and to our leadership team than to make sure that students are still getting language and grammar and English class. But in the same token, we've also expanded our world language opportunities. Seneca Valley has been fortunate to always offer Spanish, French, German, and Latin, even during the 2008-2009 cuts across the state of Pennsylvania. Our school board made a commitment to keep world languages intact and in place starting in seventh grade. In the last 5 years, we have expanded our world languages, and we now have Spanish starting in grade one. And students receive that elective or special, as we call them at the elementaries, once every 5 days, which has just been wonderful. In addition, we also offer languages like Mandarin Chinese 1, Mandarin Chinese 2, those types of languages we also offer in cyber courses. So students could take any of these world languages in a traditional track or in a cyber online class as well. And I'm very proud. We've worked very hard to increase our advanced placement and our honors classes. We now offer over 459 total courses in grades 9 through 12. When I look at our course offerings, I'm just amazed and very proud. I didn't have those opportunities as a student, and I'm certainly proud that Seneca Valley students do. And I know of no other school. While they may exist, I'm not aware of any other school offering Spanish in grade 1, starting in grade 1 in this region.
Your course offerings must look like a college catalog, for goodness sakes, at undergraduate school. It's amazing.
It does. We actually have an online course offering catalog, and the students, it's actually organized based on career clusters, so students could either click on just world languages to see what we offer, or they can go in and click on what they're thinking about as far as a career is concerned as early as ninth grade, and we divide those up by career clusters. So students may view their courses by career cluster or by subject area or by department. So we're very proud of that, and that's something that our technology department has worked closely with our curriculum coordinators and our teachers. So not only can you see our offerings, but you can click on the class and see a synopsis of the class and see how it's offered, whether that's traditional, blended, cyber. You can also, in some cases, see a little video vignette or a snippet of the class before you schedule the class. And all of our scheduling is done online now. So, you know, the advancements at the high school level and the middle school level are astounding to me when I think about when I started in education 25 years ago.
It is amazing. I'm certainly glad to see world languages still in there. I took two languages while I was going through high school. Latin being one of them, and I have never regretted it for an instant. It's still a great help to me, and I'm glad to see that still in there. That's good stuff. Let me ask you one more question. I saw on your website that you have a diversity committee in the Seneca Valley School District. Can you tell us, Dr. Vitale, what that's all about?
Yes, we've had the diversity committee for quite some time. This is currently led by our Director for Human Resources, Ms. Kira Boback, and we have a new position, a new director who's working with our school nurses and our school personnel teams, school nurses and support personnel in the school district, guidance counselors, positions of that nature, and his name is Mr. Jeff Roberts. So together, they have worked to keep this committee kind of fresh with ideas in what students want and what our employees want. But the mission is really that we are being respectful of race, of culture, of socioeconomic background, of special education, and that we are focused in our classrooms on making sure that our students understand that this is a world economy, a global economy. And in order for us to be a successful nation, we have to know quite a bit about geography, about culture, and about diversity. And we have three different divisions in the diversity committee, and that is one is an in-house kind of employee side of it. Another side of it is external, inviting the community in to talk with us about issues that they're either concerned about or they would like to know more about. And the final arm of this committee